Chapter 3. The Bringer of Rain. House Divine. First Kill. At first, Loken thought he'd misheard. Surely Rus hadn't said what he thought he just said. He searched the Wolf King's eyes for any sign that this was another test, but saw nothing to convince him that Rus hadn't just revealed his purpose. "Kill Horus?" he said. Rus nodded and began packing up the Heneftafel board, as though the matter were already concluded. Loken felt as though he had somehow missed the substance of a vital discussion. "You're going to kill Horus?" "I am, but I need your help to do it." Loken laughed, now certain this was a joke. "You're going to kill Horus?" he repeated, carefully enunciating every word to avoid misunderstanding. "And you need my help?" Rus looked over at Malkador with a frown. "Why does he keep asking me the same question? I know he's not simple, so why is he being so dense?" "I think your directness after so oblique an approach has him confused." "I was perfectly clear, but I will lay it out one last time." Loken forced himself to listen intently to the Wolf King's every word, knowing there would be no hidden meanings, no subtext, and no ulterior motives. What Rus required of him would be exactly as it was spoken. "I am going to lead the rout in battle against Horus, and I am going to kill him." Loken sat back on the rock, still trying to process the idea of a combat between Leman Rus and Horus. Loken had seen both Primarchs make war over the last century, but when it came down to blood and death, he saw only one outcome. "Horus Lupercal will kill you," said Loken. Had he named any other individual, Loken had no doubt the Wolf King would have torn his throat out before he'd even known what was happening. Instead, Rus nodded. "You're right," he said, his eyes taking on a distant look as he relived old battles. "I fought every one of my brothers over the centuries, either in training or with blooded blade. I know for a fact I can kill any one of them if I had to, but Horus." Rus shook his head, and his next words were spoken like a shameful confession, each one a bitter curse. "He's the only one I don't know if I can beat." Loken never thought to hear such a bald admission from any Primarch, let alone the Wolf King. Its frank honesty lodged in his heart, and he would take Leman Rus's words to the grave. "Then what can I do?" he said. "Horus must be stopped, and if you're going to be the one doing it, then I want to help." Rus nodded and said, "You are part of my brother's inner council, his, what did you call it? The Mournival. You were there the day he turned traitor, and you know the sons of Horus in a way I cannot." Loken felt the import of the Primarch's next words before he said them, like the tension in the air before a storm. "You will go back to your legion like the Aptranger that walks unseen in the wilds of Fenris," said Rus. "Lay a hunter's trail within the rogue wolf's lair. Reveal the flaw to which he is blind, and I can slay him." "Go back to the sons of Horus?" said Loken. "Aye," said Rus. "My brothers all have a weakness, but I believe that only one of his own can see that of Horus. I know Horus as a brother, you know him as a father, and there are none who can bring down fathers like their sons." "You're wrong," said Loken, shaking his head. "I barely knew him at all. I thought I did, but everything he told me was a lie." "Not everything," said Rus. "Before this madness, Horus was the best of us, but even the best are not perfect."
"Horus can be beaten," added Malkador. "He is a fanatic, and that's how I know he can be beaten, because beneath whatever horrors drive them, fanatics always hide a secret doubt."
"And you think I know what that is?"
"Not yet," said Rus, "but I'm confident you will."
Loken stood as the Wolf King's certainty filled him. He sensed the breath of someone standing near him, the nearness of the ghost that finally convinced him to accept Malkador's summons to Terra.
"Very well, Lord Rus. I will be your pathfinder," said Loken, extending his hand.
You may have your sights set on the War Master, but there are those within the ranks of the Sons of Horus to whom I owe death." Rus shook his hand and said, "Have a care, Gavier Loken. This isn't a path of vengeance I'm setting you on, nor is it one of execution. Leave such things to the rout. It's what we do best." "I can't do this alone," said Loken, turning to Malkador.
"No, you cannot," agreed Malkador, reaching to take Loken's hand. "The knights errant are yours to command in this. Choose who you will, with my blessing."
The sigilite glanced down at Loken's palm, seeing the fading echo of a bruise in the shape of a gibbous moon.
"A wound?" asked Malkador.
"A reminder."
"A reminder of what?"
"Something I still have to do," said Loken, looking up to the ruined citadel high on the cliff, as the hooded figure of a man he knew to be dead withdrew into its shadow.
Loken turned from Rus and Malkador, following the snaking path that led back down the valley. As he left, the clouds gathered beneath the dome, split apart, and a warm rain began to fall in the Hegemon. The blood-red knight climbed through the rocky canyons and evergreen highlands of the Unter Messas with long, loping strides. At nearly 9 meters tall, its mechanized bulk simply splintered the lower branches of the towering bitterleaf trees it didn't bother to avoid. Some broke apart on impact. Some were sheared cleanly by the hard edges of the knight's iron shield. A wonder of ancient technology, the knight was lighter kin to the Titan legions, a lithe predator to their lumbering war engines. Its name was Banelash, and a crackling whip writhed at one shoulder mount. Upon the other, banked racks of heavy stubber barrels whined with the energy stored in their propellant stacks. The knight's hull plates were vermilion and ebony, segmented and overlapping like burnished naga scales. It had reaved the borders between warring states of Molech 1,000 years before the coming of the Imperium. The knight was a predator, stalking the mountain forests, seeking dangerous quarry to bring down. Encased within the pilot's compartment, Raven Divine, second-born son of Molech's Imperial Commander, let the sensorium surround him with graded representations of the landscape. Plugged into Banelash via the invasive technology of the Throne Mechanicum, its every motion and stride was his to command. His limbs were its limbs. What it felt, he felt. Sometimes, when he rode into the secret canyons to join Lix and her intoxicated followers, the knight's heart would surge with memories of its previous pilots, a ghostly parade of wars he'd never fought, foes he hadn't killed, and blood he'd never shed. Its powered whip had belonged to Raven's great-great-grandfather, who was said to have slain the last of the great Naga Hydra of distant Ophir. A golden eagle icon within the sensorium depicted his father's knight 1,000 meters below him. Cyprian Divine, Lord Commander Imperial of Molech, was rapidly approaching his 125th year, but still piloted Hellblade like he thought he was the equal of Raven's juvenated 64. Hellblade was old, far older than Banelash, and was said to be one of the original Vajras, that rode the Fulgurine path with the Stormlord thousands of years ago. Raven thought that unlikely. The Sacristans could barely maintain the war machines of Molech's noble houses without their Dua Mechanicum overseers to hand. What hope would they have had before them? Darting icons, representing House Divine's retainers, beaters and huskarls on skimmer bikes, ranged around his father's knight. But Raven had long since outrun them into the mountain's misty peaks. If anyone was going to slay the beasts, it would be him. The tracks of the rogue Malagra pair led into the highest regions of the Unter Messas, a knife-back range of mountains that effectively divided the world in two. It was rare for the great beasts, once so plentiful on Molech, now hunted almost to extinction, to come within sight of human beings, but as their numbers dwindled, so too did the extent of their hunting grounds. The last 3 winters had been harsh, and the spring scarcely less so, with the snow blocking the paths through the mountains. Prey animals had been driven down to the warmer lowlands, so it was little wonder that Malagra were forced to descend from their fissure lairs upon waking from hibernation.
The settlements, crouched in the foothills of the Untermessas, scattered strip-mining hives and refining conurbation stacks mainly, were now within the hunting grounds of a ravenous Malagra and its mate. 300 people were already dead, and perhaps another 30 missing. Raven doubted any of those taken were alive, and if they were, they'd soon wish they'd died in the first attack. Raven had heard stories of Malagra that had devoured their victims over days, a limb at a time. Bleating petitions sent to the city of Lupercalia, a name of exquisite poor taste in these days of rebellion, begged the knight seneschal to sally forth and slay the beasts. Despite the high level of alert imposed on Molech with a war master's treachery, Raven's father had chosen to lead a hunting party into the Untermessas. As much as he despised his father, Raven couldn't deny that the old man knew the value of his word. Despite Lix offering innumerable pledges to the serpent gods to end Cyprian's life, they had so far not obliged. Raven had never really shared his sister wife's faith in the old religion, only indulging her beliefs for the carnal and intoxicating diversions they provided from the daily tedium of existence. The path he was following traced the edge of a plunging cliff. Through breaks in the fog and cloud, Raven could see the plains thousands of meters below. The trees reached almost to the sheer drop, snapped off where the brutish Malagra had passed. Their trail was easy enough to follow. Blood stained the ground in slashing arcs, and every now and then he saw splintered nubs of discarded bone jutting from the snow. He'd inloaded the bio sign taken from the latest attack to Banalash's Auspex, and it was only a matter of time until he came upon the beasts.
"Sooner than I thought," he said, emerging into a widened area of clear ground and halting his knight's advance as he saw a huge body lying butchered on the snow before him.
At full height, a Malagra stood nearly 7 meters tall, with bulky simian shoulders and long, muscular arms that could tear an unskilled knight apart. Their heads were blunt, conical horrors of mandibles, tentacles and row upon row of serrated triangular teeth. They had 6 eyes, 2 forward-looking in the manner of predators, 2 sighted for peripheral vision, and 2 embedded in a ridged fold of flesh at the back of its neck. Evolutionary adaptations that made them devils to hunt, but Raven had always enjoyed a challenge. Not that this beast offered much in the way of threat. An ivory-furred adolescent male, around 5 meters tall, it lay on its side with its belly carved open. Thick red blood steamed in the cold, and glistening ropes of pinkish-blue intestines pooled around its stomach, like butcher's offal. The corpses of 12 miners lay scattered around the creature's body. Raven walked his knight around the dead beast, keeping one eye on the sensorium for any sign of the female. Bloodied tracks led into the forest farther back from the edge of the cliff. Before he could resume the hunt, the ground shook as Hellblade finally caught up to him. A number of skimmer bikes followed as Banalash's sensorium fizzed with static and Cyprian Divine's lined patrician face appeared on the picked manifold. Wanting to get the first word in, Raven said,
"Glad you could join me." "Damn you, boy! I told you to wait for me," snapped his father. "You aren't Knight Seneschal yet. First kill isn't yours to make."
The skimmer bikes circled the two knights, several retainers dismounting to check the miners for signs of life.
"As always, your snap judgments of my actions is entirely misplaced," said Raven, lowering his pilot's canopy to the Malagra's body and studying the shredded mass of its flanks and chest.
By themselves, none of these injuries were mortal, but each would have been excruciatingly painful. The wound in its belly had killed the beast, a disemboweling cut made by something viciously sharp and with the power to rip through tough hide to the organs beneath. Raven pulled the canopy back to its full height and said,
"I didn't kill it." "Don't lie to me, boy."
"You know me, father. I'm not shy of taking credit for things others have done, but this beast didn't fall to me. Look at these wounds."
Hellblade leaned over the corpse, and Raven took a moment to study his father's ravaged features in the manifold. Cyprian Divine had eschewed Juvenat treatments that were purely cosmetic, only allowing those that actively prolonged his life. In Cyprian's world, all else was vanity, a character flaw he saw most evidently in his second son. Raven's older half-brother, Albard, had always been Cyprian's favoured son, but a failed attempt to bond with his knight 43 years ago had broken his mind, and left him a virtual catatonic. Kept locked away in one of the divine towers, his continued existence was a stain on the ancient name of the house.
"These tears in the beast's flesh are messy, like something your chain saber would do," said Raven, as the divine retainers carried the bodies of the miners to the skimmer bikes. From the attention one man was getting from a medicae, it appeared there was actually a survivor.
"The female must have done this," declared his father. "They must have fought over the spoils, and she gutted him."
"An unlikely explanation," said Raven, circling the corpse.
"You have a better one?"
"If the female killed her mate, then why did she leave the bodies?" said Raven. "No, something drove her from here."
"What could possibly drive a female Malagrah from her mate?"
"I don't know," said Raven, lifting one of his knight's clawed feet and tipping the hulking Malagrah onto its front.
"Something that can do this."
Bloodied craters punctured the creature's back, each one unmistakably an exit wound of explosive ammunition.
"It's been shot," hissed Cyprian. "Damn it all. House Kaushik, it's got to be. Those faithless scavengers must have picked up the distress petition and sent their own knights into the mountains, hoping to steal glory from my table."
"Look at these wounds," pointed out Raven. "House Kaushik are little better than Tazkar savages. Their sacristans can barely maintain the fusion-powered crankers they favour, let alone anything this powerful."
His father ignored him and strode towards the tree line where the blood-smeared tracks of the second Malagrah disappeared.
"Sort out the retainers, then follow me," ordered Cyprian. "The female's injured, so she can't have gone far. I'll have her bloody head above the Argent Gate before morning, boy, and if anyone gets in my way, mark my words, I'll have their heads up beside it."
Cyprian walked Hellblade into the darkness beneath the bitterleaf canopy, leaving Raven to deal with mundane business beneath his notice. Raven turned Banilash and declined the canopy towards the circle of skimmer bikes where the dead miners were being strapped down. He linked with the Vox Servile and said,
"Take the bodies back to whichever hellhole they were abducted from. Issue standard remuneration for death in service to any dependents, and send death notices to the exactor adepts."
"My lord,"
said the senior retainer.
"Out of curiosity, is the survivor saying anything interesting?"
"Nothing we can understand, my lord,"
said the medicae, one hand pressed to the side of his helm.
"It's doubtful he'll live much longer."
"So he's saying something?"
"Yes, my lord."
"Don't be an idiot all your life, man," snapped Raven. "Tell me what he's saying."
"He's saying Ling Chi, my lord," said the medicae. "Keeps repeating it over and over."
Raven didn't know the word. Its sound was familiar, like it belonged to a language he couldn't speak, but was vaguely aware existed. He put it from his mind and turned Banilash, knowing his father wouldn't approve of his dawdling with the lower orders. He walked his knight into the shadow of the towering bitterleaf tree line. His mood was sour as he followed Hellblade's tracks and the bio-sign of the wounded Malagrah. One dead beast and another his father was sure to claim. What a colossal waste of time this hunt had proven to be. Hellblade was a bullish machine, without the agility of Raven's mount, and the trail of broken branches was easy to follow. In many ways, it was the perfect match for Cyprian Divine, a man who lived as though in the midst of a charge. Cold beams of light shafted through the forest canopy, ivory columns glittering with motes of powdered snow. Raven followed Hellblade's tracks through the narrow canyons of the forest, emerging onto a windswept plateau. Patches of crushed rock and smeared blood led into a bone-strewn fissure in a cliff ahead.
"Gone back to your lair," said Raven. "That was stupid."
His father's eagle icon in the sensorium was just ahead, 200 meters into the fissure, and Raven remembered the last time Hellblade had fought a Malagrah. It had been on the eve of Raven's becoming, a day some 40-odd years ago, but forever etched in his mind. A rogue sacristan had tried to kill his father by blowing out the cranial inhibitors of a docile Malagrah with an electromagnetic bomb. The pain-maddened beast almost killed Raven and Albard, but their father had split it in two with a single strike of his knight's chain-saber, despite taking spars of iron through his chest and stomach in the battle. But that wasn't the story that caught the people's imagination.
Raven had stood before the rampaging monster with only his brother's powerless energy saber held before him, a tiny figure who faced down the beast with no hope of victory. Lix's carefully placed whispers lauded Raven's courage and diminished Cyprian's. Years passed, and Raven expected to take up his hereditary position, but the old bastard just wouldn't die. Even when Raven fathered three boys to continue the house name, Cyprian showed no sign of letting the reins of power slip from his grasp. Denied any power of real worth, Raven spent the years indulging Lix in her beliefs, even taking part in some of her cult's rituals when the inevitable boredom took hold. Lix was an Epicurean of the sensual arts, and the nights they spent beneath the moons, naked and delirious from envenomed Caban wine, were certainly memorable, but ultimately hollow compared to ruling an entire world. A wash of red light through the sensorium snapped him from his bitter reverie, and he immediately brought Banilash up to full stride. Threat filters filled the auspects, and Raven heard the familiar snaps of massed stubber fire.
"Father," he said into the box. "The beast," returned a voice thick with strain. "It wasn't the other's mate."
Raven pushed Banilash deeper into the darkness. Dazzling arc lights unfolded from the upper surfaces of the knight's carapace, flooding the fissure with light. The sensorium could guide him, but Raven preferred to trust his own eyes when death lay in wait. Banilash strained at the edge of his control, a wild colt even after all this time. Raven was tempted to let it take the lead, but kept his grip firm. The older pilots were replete with tales of men whose minds had been lost when they allowed a mount spirit to overwhelm them. Raven powered the whip and fed shells into the stubber cannon. He felt the heat of their readiness envelop his hands, letting the trip hammer of his heart mirror the thunder of Banilash's reactor. The fissure was a winding split in the mountains. Its course was thick with debris, rotting vegetation, frozen mounds of excrement, and the half-digested remains of dismembered carcasses. Raven crushed it all flat as he followed the sounds of lasfire and the shrieking roar of a heavy-gauge chainsaber. He pulled Banilash into a widened portion of the fissure, a cavern where the walls almost met high above and all but obscured the sunlight. The spotlight beams lit a nightmarish sight of the largest Malagra he had ever seen, fully 10 meters tall and broader than any of the largest knights. Its fur was a piebald mixture of white and russet, and its long arms were absurd with musculature. Blood poured from a wound torn in its side, but this beast cared nothing for such hurts. Hellblade was down on one knee at the edge of a sulphurous chasm that belched noxious yellow fog. Its right leg was buckled, and his father was desperately fending off thunderous blows from the monster's simian arms with the revving edge of his blade. Blood sprayed, but the Malagra was too enraged to notice. Raven lowered his mount's head and charged, uncoiling the whip and letting fly with a burst of stubber fire. High-caliber bolts burned a path across the Malagra's back, and it reared at the suddenness of his attack. Raven blanched at the monster's size and the grizzled ancient texture of its hide. Now he understood his father's last words. This wasn't the dead adolescent's mate. It was its mother. The Malagra leapt at him, bellowing in outrage. A clubbing arm smashed into Banilash's canopy, glass shattered, and Raven sucked in a breath of savage cold. The impact was monstrous, and the beast swung at him again. Raven swayed aside, pulling the iron shield over his exposed canopy to deflect the blow. The Malagra's blackened claws swept past him, barely a handspan from tearing his face away. Raven shucked his gun arm forward, and a hurricane of stubber fire strobed the canyon with muzzle flare. Tracer rounds stabbed into the Malagra's shoulder, setting light to its fur and driving it back. He followed up with a crack from the energy lash that ploughed a bloody trough in its chest. The Malagra roared in pain, and Raven didn't give it a chance to recover. He stepped in close and slammed the hard edge of his iron shield into its face. Fangs snapped, and oily blood poured from its ruined maw. The lash cracked again and peeled the muscle from the monster's thigh. A clawed hand tore at his chest armor, but Raven batted it away with the barrels of his stubber cannon. He brought the arm back and pumped half a dozen shots into its face, shattering the bone and exploding the eye sighted in the side of its skull.
The Malagra surged towards him, and not even Raven's gen-hanced reflexes could match its speed. Its corded arms encircled Banalash and began crushing the life out of him. Hot animal breath doused him in rank saliva and the reek of rotten meat. Raven gagged at the stench and fought to escape the monster's grip. They stamped back and forth through the cavern like drunken dancers at a serpent revel, slamming into walls and dislodging debris from high above. A chunk of rock smashed onto Raven's shoulder, buckling his pauldrons and shattering his carapace lights. Broken glass rained into the shattered canopy, and Raven flinched as razored fragments sliced his cheeks. Warning lights flashed on the damaged sensorium. Armor squealed as it reached its maximum rated tolerances. Raven brought his knee up into the Malagra's side, where his whip had previously wounded it. The beast roared, almost deafening Raven, and its pain gave him the opening he needed. He slammed his iron shield against the bloodied, heat-fused side of the Malagra's skull. The monster's grip loosened, and Raven pulled free of its crushing embrace, unleashing a blitzing stream of fire into its chest and head. Repeated lashes from his energy whip followed each salvo, and the mewling beast stumbled away, its lifeblood flashing to red mist in the cauterizing heat of gunfire. Raven laughed as he drove it back. He didn't see Hellblade surge up on its one good leg behind the Malagra. All he saw was the fountain of viscous blood as the revving blade of his father's chain saber exploded from the Malagra's ribcage. The life fled from its eyes, and Raven felt something caged within his chest for 4 decades stir at the monster's death, something barbed and hateful and full of spite. The juddering chain saber caught on the Malagra's ribs. It spasmed with false life before Cyprian wrenched the blade out through its side in a flood of reeking viscera. The gutted beast toppled into the chasm, and anger filled Raven as it fell. He turned Banalash to face his father's wounded knight. Hellblade crouched at the edge of the chasm, one leg buckled beyond its ability to bear any weight. The knight had suffered a grievous hurt, but with the ministrations of the Mechanicum and the Sacrisons, it would walk again.
"It died a good death," said Cyprian between heaving breaths and using the end of his stilled blade to remain upright. "Damn shame the head is gone, though. No one's going to believe the size of that thing." "The kill was mine," said Raven with cold fury. "Now you're being ridiculous," returned Cyprian. "I'm the knight seneschal. The right of first kill was always mine. Don't piss your britches, boy. I'll credit you with aiding me. You'll win a share of the glory." "Aiding? You'd be dead if it wasn't for me. But who ended its life? Me or you?"
The cage in Raven's chest unlocked, and the barbed thing of hate and ambition that imprinting with a throne Mechanicum had sought to imprison was freed to stab his soul once more.
"And who will they say ended yours?" hissed Raven. "Me or the Malagra?"
Too late. Cyprian Divine saw the depthless well of venom in his son's heart, but there was nothing he could do to stop what happened next. Stepping back to plant Banalash's clawed foot in the centre of Hellblade's chest, Raven kicked the knight into the chasm. His father yelled in outrage, and Raven watched the ancient machine fall end over end. It slammed into a sharp outcropping of rock and broke apart like a confiscated automaton from the clockwork city beneath a sacristan's forge hammer. The remains of Hellblade vanished into the sulphurous mist, and Raven turned away. With every purposeful stride he took from the chasm, the poisonous ambition within him took an ever more defined shape. Raven was now Imperial Commander of Molech. What would Lix make of this new development? Raven grinned, knowing exactly what she would say.
"The serpent gods provide," he said.